Let's take our Bibles again tonight, turn to the book of 1 Timothy. I'd like to use sort of these flagship verses again tonight, but we'll soon leave this and get to some of the other thoughts that form part two of this message entitled Dress Matters. And 1 Timothy chapter 2, let's read 8, 9, and 10 tonight, and then we'll have a word of prayer and ask the Lord's blessing once again. Paul, of course, is writing to Timothy. And he says, I will therefore that men pray everywhere, lifting up holy hands. Don't forget that word holy, how important. We mentioned that is last week. Without wrath and doubting, in like manner. So holiness governs that. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel with shamefacedness and sobriety, not with broided hair or gold or pearls or costly array, but... and an explanatory thought, which becometh women professing godliness with good works. Let's pause there. We'll end our reading. Dear Father, would you guide us tonight? This is a thorny, prickly, difficult subject, one about which people will always have different ideas. And what we seek is illumination and guidance from you that will help us make intelligent, biblical decisions for our personal lives within the realm of Christian liberty, but also in the realm of our corporate worship and what we do as a church family. We seek for your guidance. We seek for your blessing. We seek for peace, harmony, and the blessing of God to rest upon us in all of these things that we have to go over and talk about from time to time. And Lord, would you just give me liberty and freedom tonight? Would you give me the ability to enunciate clearly and to say those things that would be helpful in this process? And we'll thank you for all that you do for us in Jesus' wonderful name. Amen. Well, if you had just joined us tonight, I'll just mention we are doing a series on our Workers' Covenant, which is a document that we drew up, back in the early 90s. And in the first six statements of that, Workers' Covenant, sort of the idea of just sort of looking at some of those things that we feel are appropriate to kind of give us some guidance about where we should fall and how we should conduct ourselves on various issues. When we get just beyond the idea of coming through the doors of the church, but now we have progressed to areas of service and responsibility within the church. So that's what a workers' covenant is. And you've seen already that there are, nine statements in this, the first six of which really are not statements that are time or context sensitive. In other words, they talk about things that the principles that govern them and the position that you need to take really isn't going to change. But like number six, when we looked at that a couple of weeks ago, we saw that deals with versions of the Bible, and that's a tough issue for some. It's a very emotional issue for some, but it isn't an issue that time has a way of pushing on. And so sometimes it's good just to come back and kind of rehearse where we are and see where we fall and understand what's best for us to do there. And this statement number seven, let's take a quick look at it. I think we can put that up for you. This deals with dress. Boy, you talk about one of those subjects that would make a preacher having to give a message on this a little nervous. By the way, we have collared shirts this week instead of collared shirts. But anyway, if you weren't here last week, it was inadvertently spelled wrong, but it was collards like collard greens and mustard greens. And I know that some of these weird greens are in right now, but we have that fixed for tonight. Now, so when you look at this statement tonight, you'll sort of sense the things that I've just said, and you may feel as you look at this again that it reflects the fact that it was written a number of years ago, but let's look at it anyway. We're using it for a baseline, and let me just reiterate what you see there tonight. I will try to furnish you with statements 7, 8, and 9 with any tweaking that we do when the series is over, but we're just sort of using this as a baseline from which to present these messages and talk about these issues once again. So it says, I will dress and groom. Now, bear in mind, context is a workers' covenant. I will dress and groom in keeping with the standards and practices of this ministry in the performance of church-related responsibilities. Now, do you notice right away, this is not a deacon standing at the door watching what you come in with. Either when we talked about Bible versions, certainly we don't do that here, and certainly we don't do that here with regard to dress. But now when you sort of move up a little bit, it's beyond just joining the church, and it's talking about, well, what's good for the choir? What's good for ushers? What's good for teachers, Sunday school teachers? We kind of need to have some guidance that we can give people, and that's what this was meant to do. So in the practices of this ministry, in the performance of church-related responsibilities, except for specially designated activities, ladies should wear modest knee-length dresses or culottes. Men should wear a collared shirt, there's your famous word, and a tie and coat when appropriate. And again, you're trying to write something that governs all of the context, and so you put when appropriate, because what you're saying by that is you don't ask people to wear a tie and coat for everything, but there are sometimes maybe we feel that is appropriate, or when we wrote this. Hair should not be, this deals with grooming now, hair should not be excessive in length, and any beard and mustache should be kept neatly trimmed. Well, your last thing about grooming, I mean, grooming is always going to be important, right? We're always going to want to be above board in that area, but your whole thing of beards, and I mentioned this as an introduction to the Workers' Covenant series, that I can remember coming here, and the old guidelines were up on the cork board, and the when I pulled that paper off there, the cork underneath the paper was a different color than the cork around it because that paper had been there so long. But that particular paper then, it was dated at that point because it was obviously reflecting some of the concern that was coming out of the 60s and 70s when you had the long hair hippie movement and all that kind of thing, and beards kind of got thrown into that. Well, I think we're past that now. I think we understand that a man, it's not a sinful for a man to wear a beard. But grooming is always something that's important. So, okay, we've seen enough of that. Let's put that down and let's progress with the message tonight. What I really want to do with this is to try to give us biblical principles that we can take and use in our private lives as believers to figure out, okay, well, when I'm not at church then, and when I'm not really concerned about the performance of a church-related responsibility, what's good for me? Can the Bible give me any guidance there? And some of these principles are going to be very helpful in that respect. But bear in mind, a lot of what I'm gearing my comments to are to try to maybe explain why you say a certain thing or looking for guidance within that specific realm of your church context. But three principles then that we can use, and the principles, folks, won't change. But sometimes it is true how you apply them could change. And that's why I think it is helpful for us every so often. It's healthy, it's wholesome just to discuss these things. And when we're done with it, we may not all agree on every little dotting of I's and crossing of T's, but at least we can kind of chart a course. So last time we talked about modesty. Now let me look at this with you once again real quick, not to go over that message, but modesty certainly is a principle taught in the Bible. Modesty certainly is a principle that is going to be there over time and is not going to change. But in some instances, what is agreed upon as being modest or what is felt to be immodest does change over time. You remember the illustration that I put up last week that came from an 1868 edition of the Harper's Bazaar magazine that showed a scale of what a young girl's skirt should be. And people looked at that and went, wow. And I said, yeah, that's mid-Victorian. Remember that, 1868? We saw that last week. If you were in actual Victorian times, it would have been stricter yet. But when we look at that, nothing there offended us. In fact, it seemed perhaps overly conservative to us today. Yet I think we also all realize you would come to a certain point where everyone would agree this isn't modest. You following me there? I mean, how we have applied modesty in terms of the length of a, if we pick on the ladies for a minute, the length of a lady's skirt or dress, maybe what we feel is modest or immodest has changed some over time. But we all agree modesty is still important because there is going to come a point where something is immodest, both for a man and a lady. Okay so far? I think that's a reasonable way to put that. So modesty is important, and if you're looking for the place in the Bible that uses the word, it's in 1 Timothy 2, 8, 9, and 10, though you have a lot of things that inform the principle. In the King James Version, at least, the only place you encounter the word modest is in verse 9. In like manner also that women adorn themselves in modest apparel. And as I pointed out last week, you actually have two occurrences of the word modest. It's just the verb form. We don't usually use modest as a verb. So it's translated adorn, and it means to order or arrange. So that's why it's translated adorn. And you may say, well, you know, I don't feel that when I get up every day and just do my house chores that I adorn myself. But there is something to realizing the significance of this word, to order or arrange, because we would maybe use a very colloquial way of putting that in a more relaxed context that still points to the idea of what's involved in that word if you would say, fix yourself up. And that's basically what it's getting at. It's getting at the fact that there is some order and some arrangement to what we do. So it's given the translation adorn in this verse and also in 1 Peter chapter 3, I think it might have been verse 5. It's the context in 1 Peter chapter 3. But then it says in modest apparel, so that which reflects some degree of thought and arrangement and order. But then two other words really help us understand what we're talking about here. It says with shamefacedness and sobriety. And here's a place we kind of get caught a little bit, because we do use the word sobriety today, but usually we're thinking of a very specific application. We're thinking about alcohol, although you get back to the whole idea, which is good judgment. Your judgment is impaired if you take too much alcohol, right? So the idea behind sobriety is the idea of good judgment. That's what's involved here, good judgment. And the idea behind shamefacedness is the idea of reverence or respect. So what we've learned is that modesty doesn't go out of style. Modesty is always going to be important. That really what's informing this concept of modesty, whether you apply it to men or women, is who God is. And God is holy, and that's why it says in verse number 8 that the men are commanded to be in holiness, to pray and lift up holy hands without wrath and doubting. Then in like manner, so that principle transfers down. If we're saying that shamefacedness means respect, who are we respecting? I pointed this out last week. Your parents, that's good, you should, that's a biblical principle. The leadership of the church, that's good, that's a biblical principle. You know, but really, folks, ultimately, when we make these decisions about what's good and appropriate for church and for church service, it's God that we should really keep in view. That is the paramount thing, not necessarily someone's list, not necessarily what someone else thinks, but we ought to realize that we come into a house of worship and we come to meet with God. So those things should inform our idea of what is appropriate and modest in the sense. That was what we talked about last time. So let's get off of that. Let's give a second principle and then a third. Let's turn to the book of 1 John. So back towards the conclusion of the New Testament. Not the Gospel of John, the little epistle, 1 John. And our second principle is the principle of worldliness. I hope I can say some things to you tonight about this principle that will be maybe not what you're expecting, that will be on the fresh side and that will be helpful in informing us not just about this, because worldliness is something you can apply across the board, not just to dress issues. But the verses are 15, 16, and 17 in chapter number 2. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. If any man love the world, the love of the Father is not in him. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life is not of the Father, but is of the world. And the world passeth away, and the lust thereof, but he that doeth the will of God abideth forever. Now, I want to ask you a question. What is worldliness? See, the reason I ask you the question, what is worldliness, is because when you start getting into a context of a discussion like this, we tend in our mind to go to a list. And that's not necessarily bad or wrong, but it does have its built-in weaknesses. What happens is, and I hate to use a negative example because I don't really want to be identified with this, but like the Pharisees, they came up with lists. They came up with rules. Their motive was good in that. What were they trying to do? They were trying to build a hedge around. They were trying to keep people from going over the lines of good, solid biblical precepts and principles. But you know, folks, there is a weakness in that, because when you define worldliness as a list, no matter how good your list is, no matter how conscientious the people are who are putting the things down on this list, there's already a built-in weakness, because you're not going to be able to cover everything, and you're going to leave the impression with people that if I do the things or don't do the things that are on this list, I'm not worldly, I'm spiritual. But the trouble is, you can never have a list that covers everything completely, and over time the list has to change. So what I want to present tonight is not that lists are evil, because many times you're just simply trying to make a good faith effort to give people examples of things that just kind of stick out in your culture and at the time, that believers do tend to agree this isn't the best for us. So I'm not debunking that, but I want to take a different approach tonight. Because if we can come up with a concept of what worldliness is that's beyond just a piece of paper with rules on it, then we can apply it to everything that we do, not just the context of a discussion about dress. Someone has put it this way, and listen to this, because I think this is excellent. Within the context of what you saw in 1 John 2:15, look at it again. Love not the world, neither the things that are in the world. For all that is in the world, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life, look at the next phrase, is not of the Father. Now, listen to these comments. What makes a thing worldly? Listen to John again. All that is in the world, now, ellipsis, dot, dot, dot. Leave out the things that he gives, the three examples, the lust of the flesh, the lust of the eyes, and the pride of life. And read it this way. All that is in the world, dot, 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 is not of the Father. Now the writer continues. That is the thing. You exclude the Father from your thinking. And when you do that, you are worldly, no matter what you do. You do some act or take some step or make some plans without the Father, without taking Him into consideration or concerning yourself with His will. That is worldliness. It may be perfectly innocent, a perfectly innocent thing in itself, but when you exclude the Father, it is of the world. Now, folks, that's really something we can get a hold of tonight, because that takes us beyond. It looses us really from being tied to a list or from thinking that, okay, because I conform to this list, even though the intent was good, I'm not worldly. But it's possible to have a number of things in your life that you do wherein you really haven't considered God. Now we're right back to what we saw in 1 Timothy chapter 2 about with shamefacedness and sobriety, that we should have good judgment and that we should have respect for God. That is to say, in all of life, whether it's deciding about dress, about church, or about other practices, I'm going to consider what God wants of me, because it is godly to do that, it's spiritual to do that, it's the mark of a Christian to do that, whereas it is the opposite in the world, where people do not know the Lord, do not care about the Lord, and do not factor God into their decisions or thinking. That will, I think, really help us as we deal with this some. Now, with that said, I want to go on and I want to give three examples of things that I think do reflect worldly attitudes. I want to give some examples of this tonight. So if we're trying to see how this might apply, think about the person. Now I'm going to maybe give a description. Forgive me, I'm not trying to stereotype. But let's envision three circumstances. You're walking down the street and you see, I'm not picking on teens, but this may be a teenager. And he's walking along and he's got his hat on sideways. Or maybe totally reversed, but probably just a little sideways more so. And he's got that cool look. And he's walking along. He's got the chains. He's got the baggy pants. He's got the pants way down below the normal line where his underwear are. It's not that he hiked the underwear up. It's the underwear are where they're supposed to be, but the pants are way below that. And you get the picture. You've seen that type walking along before. Now, let me ask you, he is making a statement, is he not? Because dress makes a statement. It always makes a statement. He's making a statement, and I want you to analyze what statement he's making, because he's making a worldly statement. He's making a statement that reflects worldliness, and here's what it is. I'm cool. You can see him walking along. Or whatever. I'm cool. I have the latest, and I'm hip. Well, consciously or unconsciously, he's making that statement. But is that a worldly statement or a spiritual statement? Well, it's kind of a worldly statement. And sometimes as believers, we do this. Because you know what? This reflects his values. When you make that statement, when that's subtly or clearly what you're doing, you're making the statement, it's reflecting your values. And what values does it reflect? Wrong values, because you have the wrong heroes and you want to be like the wrong people. The Father did not inform that decision. What informed that decision was other people. A concept of what's cool, a concept of what makes me identify with the herd that's out there, with the current style. And I picked on one particular description, but you can kind of apply that in many, many ways. And that's a very dangerous thing, to be an imitator at all times. And someone said that about being an imitator, you know, the choice of the national bird, you might wonder how that relates, but I want to use an analogy. It's the what? Eagle. Well, if you think about the eagle is a lofty, majestic kind of a bird. It's independent. When you see that eagle flying, and there was an article in the paper the other day about there being more of them at Raystown, that's a very heartening thing. But how many do you usually see when they fly? Way up there in the air, how many? One. Is the eagle bothered by being alone? No, he soars to great heights. He's a regal bird, a majestic bird, a bird of independence. It doesn't bother him. He's usually alone. But compare that to the buffalo. You typically don't see buffaloes alone. You see buffaloes in herds. And someone made the observation, the eagle survived, the buffaloes didn't. So, folks, I hope this is something we can understand tonight, I mean, kind of get a hold of, is that the whole idea of our being pulled, and sometimes young people are pulled strongly this way, but older folk are not exempt from this at all, that we don't like to stick out, we don't like to be different, but we like to imitate and we like to be like the thing that we consider to be cool. So I guess the real thing is better pick the right cool thing. It's who your heroes are. It's who you want to be like. It's your value system that's going to govern this. Let's take another example. Here's the guy comes along, and or it could be a girl, and a lot of times it is, so but it certainly isn't exclusive. But you look at the dress, and the dress basically says this. And we could put this a couple of ways. I want to be conservative in how I put this because I don't want to be suggestive. But the dress is suggestive. And so the statement that's made is, I'm interested. Or the statement that's made is, I'm looking. Or the statement that's made is, I'm available. Well, that can be a problem too. Not so much that it's wrong to be interested in the opposite sex. It isn't necessarily wrong. God gave us those interests. But now what's happening is instead of my dress revealing my values, my dress reveals my desires. And I've got to be very careful that the Father informs my decisions about my values. Now, if I'm interested in the opposite sex, if I'm single and so forth and everything there is appropriate, there's nothing wrong with that. But it's how I go about expressing that interest and how I go about pursuing that that needs to be informed by God so that it's not worldly in my approach. Young people, I hope I can come across to you as being very reasonable in this tonight. It isn't wrong to have those interests, but how you then pursue that and how you use dress to make a statement to attract someone else to you is extraordinarily important, because if the Father informs that, He's not going to tell you don't have any interest. He's just going to tell you that how you express that interest and the way you go about allowing someone to know that you might be interested in them needs to be in a spiritual fashion. This might sound like a homely way of putting it, but as a boy, I can remember, and I still like to do it, I just haven't done as much of it over the years since being away from the coast, but I love to fish. And as a little boy growing up, I'd go down at, well, in Charleston, it was the Battery. And so you go down there, and I had my fishing rod, and usually what we had was shrimp for our bait. So you bait your hook and throw that thing over, you know, and pretty soon you get a bite. You pull back, set that hook, and you feel something. You got something on there. Caught something. Oh, boy, this is great. Reel that thing in. You know what you had? A dogfish. Anybody here know what a dogfish is? Put your hand up if you've seen a dogfish. Okay, a few. They are about the ugliest thing you can imagine. It is not at all palatable, not at all interesting. It's not like a spot-tailed bass or a croaker or something like that that you were hoping to catch. This dogfish is repulsive. Well, fishing wasn't wrong, okay? But I caught something that I'm not too interested in. And the point that I want to make to you tonight is, listen, how you go fishing is important. Fishing isn't wrong, but how you go fishing is important, because you might just catch something you don't want. And loose dress attracts loose morals. So I'm leaving some things for parents to go over, but I'm just reminding you, it is not wrong to go fishing. But be careful the bait you use, and be careful the way you go about this. Let the Father inform that. Listen, if you let God bless you in that area and commit that to Him and get some good counsel and all that, it's going to work out. It is going to work out. God is going to bless you, and all other things being equal, unless the Lord has an unusual and different plan for your life, and you do need to be submitted to that, it's going to work out. So here's the third thing. Now here's somebody comes walking in, and this is James chapter 2. This is Goldfinger. Where I get this from is that's exactly what the word is in Greek. He's got the gold ring on his finger. So this guy comes sashaying in, and he's got a Rolex watch. What's that guy from North Carolina? A John what? A John Edwards haircut. You know, and a $1,500 suit, that might not be that far off the scale in this day and time, but it's a little beyond my means, I can tell you that. Do you need that when you come to church? I mean, even if the workers come and it said there's certain contexts where maybe for a man they're looking for a coat and tie, do you really need that? It might be that your motivation is not doing your best. It might be your motivation is totally different. It might be your motivation is you're making another statement. Just like the guy's making the statement that I'm cool, it reflects the wrong values. Another person makes the statement I'm interested or I'm available reflects desires, but the desires might be expressed in the wrong way. The other guy makes the statement I'm rich. And what's that reveal? Pride. Now, there's a balance in this, like there's a balance in everything. When I grew up in the South, I used to love to listen to the blacks talk about your Sunday go-to-meeting clothes. If you'd ever seen this in the context that I grew up and saw it, you'd smile and you would enjoy it. And nothing derogatory. To me, it was one of the most enjoyable, interesting things. I mean, people would go through the week and they didn't have much. They didn't have much. But I'll tell you one thing, buddy, when Sunday came, they rolled out whatever the best they had. That was where that expression, Sunday go to meeting clothes. Now, there's a balance in that. You know, I'm sure that a few might have, human nature being what it is, white or black or green or whatever, human nature being what it was, it might have been that, you know, you go show off. But there was something else involved in that too, and some of that was respect. They have a thought there that's too bad we've lost out on. It's a good thought. But you could have the wrong statement. And, you know, that really flies in the face of what it says in 1 Timothy chapter 2 and what it says in 1 Peter 3. Let me read the 1 Peter 3 one for a moment. And he says here, whose adorning, let it not be that outward adorning of plaiting the hair or of wearing of gold or of putting on of apparel, but let it be the hidden man of the heart. Or if you go back to the context in 1 Timothy, it says this, not with broidered hair or gold or pearls or costly array. Well, does that mean that the Bible's against? No. Doesn't mean that. It means that shouldn't be our emphasis. The Father needs to be in what we do. So when you put on your clothes, if you have a Rolex watch, there's nothing sinful necessarily about that. But what's your motive? You want to be careful. You're not just coming to strut your stuff. Pride is not informing your decision, but moderation. Always in Christianity, moderation is a good thing. And Paul talks about that in Philippians chapter 4, where he says, let your moderation be known unto all men. So these things tend to reflect worldliness, and I got to move on. There's more I could say there, but those are just three examples. But think about again now, not a list, but respect for the Father. What is not of the Father? So in our dress, worldliness is something to keep in view, you know, to keep as a principle that we can use, that should not govern our choices. And here's the last, appropriateness. Now, if you're back in 1 Timothy, turn to chapter 3. Appropriateness. So we have modesty, we have worldliness, we have appropriateness. 1 Timothy chapter 3, verse 15. Paul says this to Timothy, and it's right in our same epistle, right in our same context, but if I tarry long, that thou mayest know how thou oughtest to behave thyself in the house of God, which is the church of the living God, the pillar and ground of the truth. Well, we talked about this before. It isn't just dress. Many of you parents, I was commending you last week by using this example. You watch your kids. You don't want them running and screaming in church. You probably don't want them running and screaming at home, but you're a little more cautious and careful, and sometimes we kind of try to observe certain decorum about not bringing food into the sanctuary. I don't know that you can really find a verse that says that's wrong, but we kind of try to observe that decorum a little bit just because we say, well, we want to be careful and not spill and gunk things up. There's something special about in here. So we do that. What's appropriate? And again, we're talking about behaving yourself in the church of God. We're talking about a church context specifically. By the way, talking about dress in churches, I kind of come across a humorous story. I thought you might appreciate this farmer. The pastor, the farmer was a member of a small Baptist church, and the pastor noticed he hadn't been there for a few weeks, so he knocked, 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 and made a call on him, and the man came to the door, and they began to talk, and he said, brother, I noticed you haven't been in church lately. The farmer said, well, he said, I'll tell you, pastor, he said, here's the situation. He said, I really don't have anything but these old coveralls and these boots, and he said, I'm just reluctant to show up in church that way. And pastor said, well, I appreciate that. But he said, I think I can help you. He said, I have a sport coat, a shirt, some shoes, and a pair of slacks. He said, they'd be happy to give you those if that would help and if you'd promise to be in church. So the brother said, sure, that'd be great. So the next Sunday he showed up at church. He had the sport coat, all that on. Everything was great. Pastor felt good. Next Sunday came and he noticed he wasn't there. He thought, it's kind of interesting. So he went back to visit. And he asked him, he said, no, I gave you those clothes, right? You still have the clothes? He said, yeah. He said, well, then I noticed you weren't in church the following Sunday after you were. He said, yeah. He said, well, what happened? He said, well, pastor, he said, tell you the truth. He said, I got up that next Sunday morning. He said, I showered, I shaved. He said, I put those clothes on. And he said, I looked in the mirror and he said, I think I'll go to the Episcopal Church. Well, it just sort of reflects across the culture where there are some differences, but dress is kind of something that's important to us. You sure wouldn't want the farmer not to come, would you? Folks, nothing we ever say or do in this church better ever give us the idea that because someone doesn't have a certain fashion or a certain level of clothing, we would ever keep them out of our church. That's not what this is about at all. It is, though, you do the best you can with where you are and what you have. And to some people, that means different things. And sometimes it's a matter of coming along and growing in the faith and learning some of these things. Can I give you three things real quick? Things seem to come in threes. How do we determine what's appropriate? Well, it's our view of God. In every context that we're going to look at these three things as quickly as we can, so I get you out of here, but it's our view of God that determines this. Not what someone else thinks. It's our view of God that really determines. So let me give you three statements about God. What is God like? Number one, God is a God of beauty and glory. And let's look back at a verse in the Old Testament, Exodus chapter 28. God is a God of beauty and glory. Let me show you this, and we're not going to take this maybe in the direction that you think. I just want to make a general principle from this. But when God was spelling out the garments for the tabernacle and for the priests, he made this statement in Exodus chapter 28, verse 2. And thou shalt make holy garments for Aaron, thy brother, for glory and for beauty. Why did he do that? You know, this can get to be a touchy subject too. You know, you're going to remodel the church and, you know, of course, some people can really wax eloquent on, we shouldn't spend a lot of money on that, you know, because it's not the building. Well, folks, we need a balance there, like we need a balance in everything else, because what's your view of God? Now, we don't want to be extravagant. We don't want to have just gilded gold things everywhere, but within the means that we have, we want to do what is the best we can do, right? Because it's going to reflect our view of God. So when God was in the process of spelling out these garments, he didn't just say, make these garments of beauty and glory for Aaron because he's arbitrary or he wants to go to a fashion show. It's our view of God. It's a reflection of his nature. He is a God of beauty and a God of glory. How do we apply that? I suggest that we apply it exactly like it says in Revelation. If you turn to those scenes in heaven, chapter 4, I'm going to read this for you. Revelation chapter 4, and there's a verse in chapter 5. What is it like in heaven? If God is a God of beauty and glory, and when people are gathered around the throne of God, what impression do they have? Here it is. It's in the Bible. I'm not inventing this. In chapter 4, the 24 elders, verse 10, fall down before him that sat on the throne and worship him that liveth forever and ever, and cast their crowns before the throne, saying, thou art worthy, O Lord. There it is right there. He's worthy. And in chapter 5, verse 12, saying with a loud voice, worthy is the Lamb that was slain to receive power and riches and wisdom and strength and honor and glory and blessing. How would we apply that? Well, within our means, to the best of our ability, as we understand what God is like, that he's a God of beauty and glory, we want to give him our best. We want to do as good as we can do. And that's going to be different for different people. You have to govern that by your means, but it gets back to what I said before about growing up in the South with the old expression, the Sunday go to meeting clothes. That was what they had in that was good, because they gave God their best. Now, our church has different services. We have Wednesday night, we have Sunday night. I understand we kind of do some different things in some of those in the sense that we don't just, you know, do everything for the evening or Wednesday night like maybe. But if you look at your flagship service, the one that modern 21st century American culture considers to be your flagship service, then maybe that's kind of the one that we most want to think about that in respect to. But the principles are there. God is a God of beauty and glory. Secondly, God is a God of order. 1 Corinthians 14:40. Now you notice every one of these, it's our view of God that determines what we think about this. 1 Corinthians 14:40. When he tells the Corinthian church, you know, they had a little stuff going on there. Talked about that a little bit this morning. Well, he says in 14:40, let all things be done decently and in order. So God is a God of order. Did you know that God is neat? I didn't say God was a neatnik. There's a difference. Some people drive you slap crazy. But some people are the other way. They'll drive you slap crazy because they never pick up their socks and they never... Well, God isn't really like that. If you walk into a place that's a pigsty, God wasn't informing that choice. Maybe you're sick for a while and you couldn't pick up everything, but if you don't wash the dishes but once every month, and it's just stacked everywhere and there's mold all over the place. I tell you, folks, I remember one time I went to a place in Illinois to visit a guy. Somebody from the church, I don't forgotten whether he came to church. And we went to his house to visit. I've been in some humble circumstances before, but I have never been in a situation like that. That place had the stench of urine so strong in it that I almost couldn't stay in there. Nobody has to live like that. So that's an extreme example, but my thought is here, God is a God of order, and when it says let all things be done decently, decently in Greek is the word euskemonos, and that word is a word that reflects on outward appearance. It actually means good fashion. That's what it means. Schema is form or fashion, and the prefix you means good or well, so it's good fashion. Does that mean you have to have the very latest? No, but it does mean that some care to how we look outwardly is not unspiritual. It's indicated because God is a God of order, and you don't want to just give no thought to that, I guess would be a way to put it. Here's the last. God is a God of holiness, so our dress should be discreet and respectful. I'm going to give you an example of this and try to close things tonight. I think a lady wrote this, but it doesn't really matter. But someone wrote into one of these things on the internet where you, and this is above board. This is not some kooky thing. But one of these places where you can write in and ask questions, and then different people give their answers, and then they evaluate the answers. This one happens to be a Yahoo one. But anyway, someone wrote in and they asked this question. It shows you that this subject of appropriateness that we're talking about is just like... I introduced the message that it's a concern out there in the world, not just in the church. Here's the question the person wrote in. I had to attend a viewing today and was pretty mortified. I don't know that choice of words, but anyway. Seeing what some people were wearing there. When did ratty jeans become acceptable? This wasn't just the younger crowd. There were some in their 40s as well. I thought that was young. But anyway. What do you wear to a wake? Not a funeral where a suit for a man or a dress skirt suit for a woman would be called for, but for a wake. I actually felt overdressed considering the crowd, but I wore a nice sweater, pants, boots, and 3/4 length suede coat. Now, there were several answers, but here was the one that was chosen as best, and I kind of like this because it helps make the point that I want to end with tonight. Answer. I would have worn what you wore or slightly dressier to a wake. I feel the same way you do. I've actually seen people in cut-off jeans and bare midriffs at funerals. I really feel that while most days we can wear whatever, we should definitely dress respectfully. There's your word, your operative word. And then they name 4 venues for funerals, weddings, job interviews, and court appearances. Now, I don't think this person goes to church because I think they probably would have added church to their list. And that's really my whole point, though. What are they saying? They're saying that they were kind of shocked by the fact that they went to the wake and there were people there that just didn't seem to be dressed appropriately. And they felt that it didn't really show appropriate respect for the deceased or the family of the deceased. That's really what's being said here. And then they go on to say, I have 4 contexts that I feel are really important that I need to dress respectfully. A funeral, a wedding, a job interview, or court appearance. And by the way, most people do. Most people just seem to have a way of understanding that I, you know, shouldn't go dressed poorly to those things. Well, folks, listen, if the world can understand that principle and plug that into something like this, we should all be able to plug that into church and say that's number five on my list, or number one out of my five, that I want to show respect for who God is. Not for the board of elders or the... I mean, that's good. There's not wrong with that. But it's our view of God that should inform all these decisions. So look, when all is said and done, if I can summarize and say this by way of conclusion tonight, you can't really argue the principles. The principles are there, the three things that I've given. They're clearly documented in the Bible. You'll never totally agree on how you apply all these things in various contexts. And so it is very important that we keep a balance. It's very important that we keep a balance between a respect and recognition for the liberty of the believer, while on the other hand, the believer also keeps in view that there needs to be a respect for a decisions maybe that the majority of the people and the leadership of the church feels are appropriate for that context and for those situations. That's not unreasonable to keep the balance between those things. For instance, time has really impacted, and this is a whole issue that you're wondering what I think about, and I'm not going to really say here, but we'll address it in what tweaks we make. Has time affected our view of ladies and pants? I think it has, tremendously. So you have to deal with these things and figure out. Our workers' covenant statement, I think, for the contexts of what we do here in church, ushers, Sunday school teachers, well, probably that's all pretty good as it is, but I do think we need to make some recognition of the fact that time has pushed on some things. But yet again, it's very important to us keeping the peace, coming up with decisions for what we would do with choir or something like that, that generally seems to reflect where this congregation wants to be and is. All of those things are important, are they not? And respecting what a believer has the liberty to do personally, and then also respecting what's good for the whole in the assembly, that takes a pile of wisdom. And no matter how dedicated the people are who do this, you'll never have everybody totally agree on it. But these principles, I hope they're good. I hope it was good to talk about it again, and I hope you can take them with you. Heavenly Father, I pray, Lord, that you would give us not only guidance as an assembly, but I pray, Lord, that you would help us very much in our homes and in our individual lives, because we never want to be a reproach to you, and we always want to remember, like that verse says about women professing godliness, that always, whether we're men or women, if we are interested in people recognizing that we profess godliness, then help us, Lord, never to detract from that, whether it would be with entertainment choices that we make, dress choices that we make, or places we go, whatever it might be. Help us always to keep the Father in the forefront of our thinking. And we thank you now in Jesus' name. Amen.